Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Brewski, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
An 18-year-old girl found hidden under a bed on a cruise ship. A 16-year-old step-sibling now labeled a suspect, a stepmother pleading the Fifth Amendment, a custody battle detonating back on land, and a biological mother posting a 13-minute meltdown online, airing a lifetime of instability and blame. This isn't just a death on a ship. It is a collapse of two entire families at once. Today, we're digging into what investigators are actually dealing with here and what is going on and what is happening in the Anna Kempner cruise homicide case, as we try to figure out the details. Retired FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffendaffer with us to help us break this down. I know you've been watching this from the beginning, as have we. And at first it was, well, you know, somebody dies on a cruise ship. It is the FBI's jurisdiction to go in, see what's going on. We didn't really know the details at first. And it seems every single detail we've gotten has gotten darker and stranger and more confounded with chaos than the last. Let's dig into what's going on here. You have the concealment, from what we understand, of Anna Kempner's body under a bed in a cabin with her family, and a minor step-sibling now listed as a suspect. From your experience, what does it tell you about the direction this investigation is going right now?
Well, the investigation always goes in the direction of who had opportunity. And that's the big signaling right here. Who had opportunity was the 16-year-old stepson. They were sharing a cabin together. Again, separate beds. There were two bunk beds and a separate bed that Anna was supposed to be sleeping in. And when that housekeeper found that the body, when she removed the mattress, you know, that's when everything blew up. Who would have opportunity to cause this and to place the body there?
This seems like it's going to be pretty straightforward on who is going to be looked at as being responsible for this, considering it's a cruise ship. There's only usually one way to get into a cabin in most cases. I don't know that we have that confirmed yet in this, but you have the door, you have a key card that's going to log in and out. You have security cameras, I'm sure, going up and down that hallway. I'm going to be shocked if there's not. So you pretty much are going to see anyone coming and going from that room. And at the same note, also noting who's not going from that room, who went in.
Hey, Tony, let me ask you.
Came out.
Let me interrupt for just a second. You've been on some cruises recently. I went on a cruise when I was 8 years old. I'm not going to say how long ago that was. Tell me what you've noticed about security on ships.
That everything is monitored.
Like everything.
I mean, everything is monitored. I mean, you can't make a purchase with cash. Everything is going to be on a card. Everything's going to be monitored. They're going to have cameras on. It's a Carnival ship. It's a Horizon. So it is a more modern ship. You're going to have all of that. Everything is going to be logged in some way, shape, or form, I would think. And the fact that you have that, I mean, there's not a lot of room to be looking at other people in this case, is there?
I don't think there really is, no. Especially now we have confirmation, and this is brand new information. The grandparents who were on that cruise are speaking up, and they mm-hmm. said specifically he was the only one in that stateroom.
Yikes.
Yeah. You can't really walk that one back. We don't have any arrests as of this exact moment in time, I would imagine. That probably can't be very far off, can it?
No, you know, there's just separate steps because of the minor. You know, mm-hmm. federal can't adjudicate a minor.
Okay.
So because of that, there's going to be a hearing, and they're going to have to be waived up to trial as an adult, or mm-hmm. it's have to be transferred to a local jurisdiction. Those are really the only two options unless you're on an Indian reservation.
How do you address, I mean, what is protocol for interviewing a juvenile in a case like this? I assume it would be different. I mean, you're dealing with a child, so you've got to make sure you don't traumatize them, but they're also a suspect too. So what's different in this case as far as interviewing?
My understanding is he was not interviewed because he was absolutely hysterical after it docked. He was taken away to the hospital because of mental analysis. And so I don't believe he was interviewed, and I doubt that they would have made a run at him, if you will, at that time, with as little as they would have known, you know, hysterical person leaving the ship. And certainly a lawyer would be in play now. And also the permission of parents is critical. So you're not going to have any of that. I don't see him ever being interviewed until way later down the road.
But let's talk about, so everyone's clear on who was all staying in that room with Anna Kempner. We have Anna. We have the 16-year-old suspect, correct? And was there not also her younger step-sibling or brother as well? Is that correct? The 14-year-old was there too?
The step-sibling is my understanding.
Okay. So three people to this room?
Three people.
Okay. And it's the 16-year-old that is being looked at as the suspect, right? That's the that's the step-sibling of the third wife that has come in, and the 14-year-old would be the... I believe half brother of Anna, if I'm correct, from the second marriage, which would have been to the one that he married, that there's a lot of question about. We go back to 2008 of, was that the babysitter that those? Yeah.
So I need a flow chart. You guys do you have a whiteboard you could write this on for me?
Well, I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, this is such the dynamics of this case get crazier and crazier. And a lot of it doesn't necessarily, you know, have to do with the death here of Anna Kempner, but it has to do with the chaos to which she grew up around. What's been your reaction to all of this chaos as we learn layer by layer? None of this is neat and tidy as we have it come to light.
Well, anytime you have a 16-year-old as a possible suspect of a murder, and with a chokehold, strangulation by chokehold, arm bar, anytime you have something that is that violent, and not against a stranger, but against a purported loved one, you know that there are likely issues going on behind the stage. This would not have just happened. Mm-hmm. This is something, in my opinion, and in my experience, that would have evolved.
This is going to be interesting because you don't necessarily, it's hard to know, was this, you know, premeditated? Was this not? Was this an accident? Was this, you know, I don't want to say horseplay, because anybody that's doing a chokehold, I think you go beyond horseplay. But I remember just being a kid, you know, so many adults would be like, ah, it's horseplay. Like, I literally couldn't breathe. If your idiot son did this a little bit longer, I'd be dead. And I think many kids have grown up feeling that way. Unfortunately, in this case, it looks like someone's dead. So to cross the line into homicide versus tragic accident, how are they going to start going down that road, and how do you determine what is what?
Well, first of all, when you're talking about this particular hold, and this is a hold that the FBI taught for years, we called it the carotid hold, where it cuts off the oxygen to both of those, to the carotid artery. And essentially, you would collapse within seconds if it's applied properly. And I've personally applied it, trained with it. It's something that's extremely effective, especially if you're a smaller person on a larger person, to help gain control. But to kill somebody is a whole different story. This is minutes and minutes and minutes of applied pressure to finally make the brain dead, lack of oxygen. This is nothing. In other words, within seconds, he should have realized, Houston, we have a problem.
Yeah.
She's passed out in my arms. So this was much more ravaging of attack than just a simple chokehold.
Yeah, this isn't goofing around. I mean, to do this, like you said, it takes minutes. There would have to be some actual thought while this was taking place. I can't imagine, unless we're dealing with somebody who's not mentally there and could comprehend what's going on. That's another piece that I'm questioning. Do we have somebody who maybe isn't in touch with reality? I don't know.
I don't know.
Well, we know per the grandparents, they loved this young man very much. They said they considered him just like they considered all their grandchildren, very close to them. And so it's been quite tragic. But he apparently said, he told within earshot of the grandmother, I don't remember what happened. So I thought that was very interesting, because that is going to be a spontaneous utterance that, of course, the Bureau can possibly use, especially if the story ends up changing. But it's a horrible case, and I agree with you. This was a savage attack. Remember, we have reports of bruising on either side of the neck. I can tell you, anytime I've applied the carotid, I have never left any bruising, despite possible passing out or near passing out situations.
I mean, you see this sort of behavior in young men. I mean, I remember growing up and seeing boys doing this sort of shit all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And it's always just, it's the other boys, right? You know. When we get down to this, I mean, it's, you know, it obviously shows, you know, more vengeance than someone who is actually trained in how to do this correctly. But we also are learning more and more about the decisions that were made prior to this cruise even being embarked upon by the adults in the room. Decisions that one would go, why are you doing this? Why are you putting your 16-year-old or your 18-year-old daughter in the same cabin as a 16-year-old boy that supposedly has a bit of a track record with this girl of making her uncomfortable, as we've now heard from the ex-boyfriend, who made a statement publicly last week. He was making allegations, essentially stating that he was on a FaceTime call, and the now suspect, 16-year-old boy, had gotten on top of her and was doing something somewhat similar as well at home on a FaceTime call. And he was concerned and he was worried, and he said this was not okay. I guess it goes down into the question of, were the parents ever aware that this dynamic existed, or did they just, you know, put the blinders on and go, oh, you know, we're just, you're going to do what we're going to tell you to do because we're the grownups and we're paying for the cruise. So you're going to stay in this room together. There's a lot of questions there.
Well, if we believe the former boyfriend, which I had no reason not to believe him, I saw the interview. It was very spontaneous. and he seemed to be truthful. He said that he tried to tell the parents and that they just blew it off and didn't really believe him. And that's troubling. And I mean, the bottom line is, if somebody in the family who's 16 years old tried to mount my daughter, I would no way allow them to room together in a stateroom. She should have been in with the parents. And I would say, listen, hindsight is 20/20 normally, and I wouldn't try to be judgmental on that decision. But look at the information that's coming out now about the problems.
Well, it doesn't seem like boundaries and dealing with reality on reality's terms are this family's strong suit in any way, shape, or form. If we look at the pattern of behavior to see how they have demonstrated that or the lack thereof over the years, if these allegations are true. What did you, I want to make note of this because I watched that interview last night with that boyfriend who was giving it in the parking lot. And then very quickly also being swept away, I believe probably by his parents. Some adult came up and very quickly, come on, let's keep going. Stop talking to the reporters. What did you make of that? Or just a parent realizing, what you are saying might be true, but it's also extremely liable to be saying these things out loud.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head, but of course, it's not libel if it is true.
True.
What I always just, I can't imagine being an FBI agent right now. And I'm fairly recently retired. Mm-hmm. But the blow up of cases and slews and everything that happens on social media, and really something that I never saw in my cases, the witnesses that I interviewed, I always told them, please don't speak with anybody because it will only hurt your case. Don't speak with anybody. We have the grandparents speaking, the boyfriend speaking, an uncle speaking. It's amazing to me how many people want to risk justice in these cases. I don't understand why they go out and are talking. And the reason I say that is some of them have very pertinent information and information that could help either exonerate or convict this individual. And anytime you give a statement, it's in perpetuity. It lasts forever. And you can't change it. So if later on, 3 years from now, say, we're in court and they change it a little bit, defense attorneys jump on everything they did. I don't understand why they're not staying in the background, but that's coming from FBI agents.
Yeah.
Well, and they probably don't understand the implications of just talking in a parking lot. Oh, I just said one or two sentences. Well,
I guess the question is, why has the FBI not gotten to them prior to them doing that?
It's a better question.
Well, we don't know that they haven't gotten to them. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I think they have likely interviewed these individuals and they're talking anyway.
Oof. It's interesting.
Don't they warn them, though? I'm sorry, Tony.
They warn them, but there's no power. There's no real teeth in it other than to say, listen, do you want justice? You know, if you don't care, go on and blab all over. But if you can't, you be quiet.
But is that more a product of where we are today, where we've seen too many cases where there is no justice, where, okay, you want justice, then shut up. Okay, great. That may be how it used to work out in many cases, but I think we've seen so many examples where, we shut up, we followed the rules, and justice never comes. So we want the world to know our story before anybody else, because there's that new factor in there that I think hadn't existed so much in court cases in the past, and that's the public pressure. There's always been a certain amount of it, not to the insane level that exists today, where if you can get a nation behind you on a relatively small case, you're going to have a lot more people making sure their I's are dotted and their T's are crossed. And I'm wondering if more of them are going, you know what, I'm going to put my investment, I'm going to put my money on that narrative, on that way of doing things, and making sure everyone here is backing me up versus you doing your job competently.
Yeah, I think you make such a great point. And I think there's also a sense of just emotional factor here where, you know, these grandparents are so distraught and they want to tell their story and they do want to keep eyes on this and make sure justice is served.
Well, and I think the reality too is this, if you have a family unit, a family system that has, and I don't know that they've been screaming about this or saying anything. The other case I'm thinking of is the Melody or the Ashley Buzzard case, the Buzzard whole situation where obviously now you have Melody who's missing, but you have the grandparents, you have, I believe, an uncle or an aunt, all saying for years, we've been saying this, we've been reaching out and saying to the system, there's a problem here. Mm-hmm. We need to do something. We need intervention, and intervention doesn't come. We've been asking the system to do their job, and it doesn't. And if you just watch those things at play over and over and over, it's hard to have any sort of faith in any sort of system that has failed over and over. I mean, just look at the dynamics of this family. Look at the chaos that this girl grew up in, Anna Kempner, grew up around. Now, it's not a crime, the poor decisions and choices that her parents continued to make over and over, although it looks like some of them sure as hell bordered on it, or just were not prosecuted or were not pushed for charges. But at that same point, it's chaos. It's damaging. And if you're on the sideline, you're the grandparent, you're an aunt or an uncle that are not directly in that unit, and you're just watching this chaos unfold and the system allowing it to fester, yeah, I think I'd be going to social media too, rather than saying, well, how do I trust you to do anything, considering nobody else in authority has been had any sort of way to step in prior to this, and now shit really has hit the fan.
That's fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a great point.
Yeah, it's not to discount the investigator's work, and it's got to be frustrating as shit if you are just trying to do your job and do what you believe is best for that family. But I think that might be why we see more of that today than we have in the past. What sort of protections does the FBI have to balance here for a minor suspect, for a grieving family, and for a potential criminal investigation at this point?
The Juvenile Delinquency Act, that is what spells out what can and cannot be done in terms of adjudication of a juvenile. Look, the federal system is not set up for juveniles, period. And that's why they're not adjudicated in the federal system. What happens is there's a hearing, and either they can move to have the person waived up to adult status, especially in crimes involving violence, heinous, heinous crimes. I don't know if this will rise to that, if it is the step brother. A lot will depend on if he premeditated all of this.
Yeah.
And anything he said about this, the only other, and what normally happens, Tony, when I say normally, 90%+ of these cases, they roll over to the local jurisdiction.
Local jurisdiction on something like this being on a cruise ship, what is it?
It's going to be the jurisdiction where that boat docked, which I believe is Miami-Dade.
Okay. So it doesn't go back to where they're from. It is where it's based.
Let me ask you this, and this may be more of a legal question, but I'm curious if you know the answer. Could the family face any sort of charges? Could the parents face any sort of charges if, in fact, it is shown that what the boyfriend is claiming, that he did warn the family, that Anna had expressed to them that she felt uncomfortable or unsafe around the stepbrother? This is all pure speculation based on the statements made by the boyfriend. If they ignored that, if they said, yeah, we're going to put you in the same cabin no matter what.
Our child endangerment, that's the statute that comes to mind. Yeah. And then, of course, after everything happened, was anything done for obstructing the investigation and obstructing the cruise? This is the issue with any cruise ship case, is it happens out at sea typically, and you have to wait for that ship to get back. And the crime scene, just so much can be manipulated, not in terms of the key cards and not in terms of the videos, but just in terms of that scene. Remember, there's not going to be any videos inside that cabin.
Sure.
So that's, you know, I keep thinking about the life jackets and the blankets and how everything was found. And I just don't know who all was traipsing in and out of that room in the time after they made it, you know, headed back.
Let me ask you this too, because Anna was 18. So she was an adult technically, or would she be viewed as a minor I don't believe, was she still in high school?
She's still in high school. She was a senior getting ready to graduate in May.
So would she be looked at as a minor under the law in terms of parental protection and things of that? She had been 17 and this happened, but she was 18. So are they still legally under anything where that would be an effect of providing the protection and be legally liable of putting her in that room or not putting her in that room if they had known that there was a risk or that there had been threatening behavior, that she'd expressed that there was anything uncomfortable, whatever it may be? Does that 18-year-old mark make a difference in something like that?
It does. It really would negate that that situation, in my opinion. Florida, I believe the age of adulthood is 18. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, she would not be considered a minor.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Another layer that, in this case, that just keeps getting darker and stranger by the day. Hopefully, they can start to get some answers and get on a clear path, as heartbreaking and chaotic as this family is. There's certainly far worse families out there, but, you know, you keep chaos in a bottle for so long, eventually it breaks, and it looks like that's what took place here. We'll keep watching it. Let's move on to another case that continues to garner our curiosity and, of course, headlines, the David Celeste Rivas Hernandez case. We now have multiple major outlets quoting law enforcement insiders saying investigators are looking at forensic indicators consistent with dismemberment, indicators consistent with freezing or refrigeration, and even the possibility that Celeste may have died months earlier than anyone even realized. And then the part nobody can wrap their head around. Those same insiders say the person whose car she was found in has not even been interviewed by investigators, not questioned, not sat down. Nothing. Combine that with the reporting that investigators believe more than one person may have been involved in concealing her body. You can feel this case shifting from tragedy into something far more orchestrated. That is our backdrop. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, is here to help break all of this down and what it actually means from an investigative standpoint. Let's start right there. Why, if true, has no one questioned David? Or is it simply, he said, no, I'm not going to be questioned right now?
Yeah, that is your answer. Very early on, he had counsel. We know that because counsel actually said, we're cooperative. That's what the counsel said. Mm-hmm. We're cooperative. But I don't believe he's ever been questioned, and I don't think the counsel is going to let him be questioned. So that's why he hasn't been questioned. He can say no.
Mm-hmm. So does cooperative mean that you're showing up for questioning, or does cooperative mean we'll answer your questions but we don't have to necessarily give you the answer you're looking for? We can just simply say, no, we'll pass on that opportunity to talk to you.
Well, I don't know any defense attorney who has ever said my client is being uncooperative. So this is just kind of the canned speech. Yeah. Look, we're cooperating. We're being, you know. But I don't believe that's truthful at all from what law enforcement considers cooperation. Cooperation of law enforcement is you come in there, you can bring your attorney, and you answer every question asked of you, and you produce samples and anything else we need. So this would not be under the cooperative type defendant.
So why then at this point? Mm-hmm. Do you not have an arrest or something? I mean, you have a body in the back of your truck. I think that might be technically illegal. Would it not? I mean, having a human remains, dismembered remains in your vehicle, that's got to violate some law.
I
would think
typical.
at the very least you'd be brought in for something. And again, you don't have to answer the questions, but why have we seen nothing as of yet in terms of any sort of arrest or minor charges or any activity for that matter?
Well, I can tell you from my standpoint as an investigator, you want to have all the answers before you ever talk to your suspect, if you can. And in this type of a case where you have the remains that are in such horrible shape, you have an ME that has not given a cause or manner of death, and you're still sorting through what I think is a digital forensic nightmare because this kid, David, spent his entire life on the computer. I think it's going to be a nightmare for forensics to analyze everything. Plus, you have that Tesla. And we've talked about it a lot. But, you know, there's a lot of layers as to what they're going to have. I think they're no doubt they're going to have GPS. But I don't know what else they will have, depending on what he disabled.
Why do you think it'll be a nightmare in terms of that? Because I can look at it on the other side and say, wouldn't this be a godsend that everything he does is on record and everything is digital? And if he wrote or did anything about this case, about these events digitally, wouldn't that secure the case even more? Or is it more of a nightmare because it's just probably going to be that much more to go through?
It's because of the voluminous nature of all the information. I totally agree with you, Tony. If they can extract, it just depends on how good he was at deleting and covering things up. Typically, a great forensic analyst, which LAPD has, they're going to be able to, you know, find it. But this is the problem. When you have this type of volume, you only have so many people that do this job. And of those people, they've got hundreds of other cases they're looking at. And so that's why all of this is just going to take a long time.
Oh, and they have to, I'm assuming, go after credit card receipts, things like that. Start looking for, where did you pay for this cooler that we'll get to in a few minutes about the freezing body and things like that. You know, somebody had to pay for something.
Not necessarily. I mean, if you already got a fridge or a freezer and you got a body, why would you be going to Best Buy and buying a new one?
Well, maybe. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I'm just curious. I mean, I don't have a freezer that could fit a body, but that's just me.
I do, and I got seven bodies in it right now.
Well, okay,
shit, I'm talking to someone who's connected with the FBI. No.
Luckily, it's just Cornish hen bodies.
They're bodies, but they're Cornish hens.
You know, that box that I think you're going to ask me about that has the freezer, purportedly, that freezer was given as a gift from a fan because the girlfriend loved the particular cut, like the push-up pop or some sort of popsicle, and they wanted to have one in studio for convenience of freezing things. I'm just telling you, at least some of the information out there. Also, if you consider the dismemberment piece, did they dismember so she could fit in a smaller space? Now, that big Sub-Zero they show that was at the house, now, I don't know. I mean, I didn't see them take it out of there like we saw in the Harmony Montgomery case. They literally took the refrigerator because the stepmom had said she was in there at one point. So they're looking for, you know, cells or, you know, any instances of blood that could have been on that shelving, even though it'd been for years later. The fact that they didn't take that Sub-Zero out to do, you know, the analysis they would need to do, it just makes me think that they didn't, that they don't think that that's where the freezer that was used.
Let me ask this. How common is it when the FBI is going in to do an investigation and they're raiding a home and they're looking for any sort of evidence of a crime, if there is a Sub-Zero freezer in there that could potentially have held a body at one point in time, how often is that one of those things where it's like, yep, we're testing that, like, regardless? It's just like standard protocol. Like, we're going to check for prints on doorknobs or something. Just like one of those, like, we're checking this no matter what. Or is that something that they're only going to look at if they have evidence that, in this case, as we're now learning, allegedly, that the body did show signs of basically being thawed?
Absolutely. If you have any information that body was frozen, refrigerated in any way, you would take that Sub-Zero.
But what if there's not? Are you looking, is it like a standard place to look to begin with?
Well, it should be standard because drug dealers, people who have, everybody thinks the freezer is the perfect place. I don't know why. I don't know why I found so much dope in freezers, and the other place are toilet bowls. People are like, yeah, nobody's going to find it here, when that's kind of one of the first places we look. So I find that interesting. Actually, a very clever place where contraband was hidden, the most clever place, and this took 10 years for me to realize, And the next 10 years I was searched here when I searched was in the gutters on top of the house, all inside plastic. Nobody looks on the roof for things. When searches are done, we look in the yard, we're pulling up floorboards, we're taking down drywall, and nobody goes up on the roof. I tell you, I learned my lesson and I went up on the roof after that. But for getting a confession, I would have never known. And he admitted everything was up there.
Wow. That's where you got to look at the squirrels in the yard and go,
they're all high.
Does this resemble Bobby and Whitney in the 90s? And you're like, there's a squirrel over there going like, we don't do crack. Crack is whack. And the squirrels are kind of like jittery and shit. And that's how you know what's going on. The cracked out squirrels. But that is a good place, I would think, to, how about, air vents, I would think, would probably be another obvious place. Is that the place that would always be checked as well, of people think that, you know, we're going to put this in the vent and no one's going to look here?
Yeah, any place you think a kid would hide something, that's where.
Okay.
And kids always hide things where they think you're not going to look, like in a freezer, something you can't readily see. So it's pretty obvious. And of course, now this is what's interesting to me. I got to tell you, it's jumping off the page to me. Everybody's talking about this freezer situation, but nobody is asking the question, why in the hell freeze a body for months?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you, where you dismembered it? Remember, they think she might have dismembered or been dismembered in a very rural, secluded place somewhere outside of Santa Barbara. That's what this new information is saying, right? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you just dispose of the body? So I just riddled myself that. And I'm just saying, and I have a list. The list is long and healthy of non-serial killers. One of them, I'll tell you, the butcher of Montreal, who Lin Jun was his victim, a Chinese international student. And, you know, a lot of people enjoy doing things to the body once it's dead, and cannibalism. And I know nobody wants to hear that. You might think it's way over the top, but I'm telling you, it is not over the top. There is no reason to keep a frozen body. Plus, according to the new information, if we are to believe this, multiple cuts, multiple, you know, cuts in those extremities. Why is that? Were they practice cuts? Did they not get it small enough? I've already showed that you can fit somebody in a frunk as long as their limbs are dismembered. Why would you have to decapitate somebody? You wouldn't to fit in the space. Did they to fit in the freezer? If it's a normal freezer, yes, but not in a deep freeze.
Yeah. Whoever did this. Yeah. I mean, what is the reasoning for it? And why would you be doing those sort of things? None of it makes a lot of sense at all in this case. Are they any closer, do you think, to getting an idea of who may be involved in this, whether it is David, whether it's associates of his? It has to be somebody in the circle. There's somebody had access to this vehicle, without a doubt. But how close they were to him, we just don't know the answer to that question yet. Are they still just kind of letting people be people and watching their actions and seeing if some of those actions speak louder than words before swooping in? Is that what's going on right now?
Well, I tell you what, according again to all of this information that's been broken, he's been named a suspect. So that happened several days ago. And then beyond that, the newest information is that there's more than one involved. But law enforcement knew there was more than one involved. Whenever you have a dismemberment like this by somebody who's not a career criminal, who's not used to chopping up bodies and to hide them, it would only make sense that he had help. Plus, this is somebody who doesn't even rent his own places. His manager does it for him, or, you know, take care of things. This is a millionaire who has a business to run from the standpoint of he's the talent and shows to do and things like that. He has minions that handle everything else. And so to me, it was always obvious if indeed she was dismembered, he had help.
Wow. The PI, and again, there have been things with this PI that have been inaccurate in other cases. Taking his claims with a grain of salt. But they are what they are. He, early on, when he was brought in, made statements to the effect of claiming to have found writings that somehow insinuated very abhorrent things with the body, very disturbing. I forget exact terms, but it was something along those lines of just very disturbing to see somebody have written about this. With the body being in the freezer, with what you alluded to earlier, it does make me wonder, was that some of what was being alluded to? If you're concealing this body, if you're keeping this body, if you're freezing this body, does that allude to something? Or is this, again, really young, dumb people not wanting to be caught with a transient minor on their hands? Because God knows what was going on with her and the people involved. We don't know the answer to that. It could have been predatory. It might not have been. But they were harboring a minor, it seems, for some point in time. Was this freak out? What do we do with this body? Well, we can't get rid of it. Let's, and in their infinite wisdom or lack thereof, thought, well, let's freeze it until we can figure out what to do so it doesn't smell. I mean, I could see that path of stupidity still involving a chest freezer.
I can see that, Tony, for a day or two,
yeah,
maybe even a week. But why is it months, purportedly? And then why do you make the brilliant decision to put it in your car and then to park your car where in the vicinity of your house? When I've seen that before, and I could think of one particular case, it was actually a bank robbery case. And the person would steal vehicles to use in the bank robberies.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept the vehicles in a location that was a relative location near or a relative's location that they frequented. Why? Because they wanted to keep an eye on it. Mm-hmm. They wanted to know, is anybody going to, you know, is this going to be available for me? Right. And that reminded me of this. Is he posting that vehicle close so he can keep an eye on it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's happening? Well, and then I also wondered, and again, the PI didn't say this. And from what he says, he had video that he reviewed. I don't know how much video, but could people have been going and maintaining it? Do you know what I mean? And I've been trying to figure out if the information is true and she was found partially frozen, somewhat frozen.
Still thawing, basically.
Right. Like a turkey.
Everybody's put, like, as of right now, think of your turkey, like, in the fridge. Kind of half thawed, kind of half not. That seems to be kind of what they're almost describing.
There are Tesla coolers. Obviously, the Yeti is unbelievable.
Right.
For anybody who doesn't have a Yeti, get one, because they're unbelievable. They keep everything cold for weeks. It's crazy.
David, are you listening?
And then you have dry ice. Somebody have been, in other words, was everything in that plastic bag that we saw, was there a little Yeti cooler in there? We know it was 70 pounds. That was from the initial reporting. What else could have been in there? You know, I don't know.
There's so many questions.
Don't you look at credit card statements? Did you buy dry ice? I haven't purchased dry ice.
Well, I'm sure all of that's being looked at right now. Anticipating the next move here, giving everything that's been reported, the forensics, the timeline, the potential for multiple suspects, the non-cooperation. Jen, what do you think is the next major step here in this case in terms of developments?
The next major step is that ME, once the ME probably comes back undetermined, he's got to get that body, which we know we can't even track anymore in their system. That body needs to go to a forensic anthropologist. And they're going to have to dig in on it.
Mm-hmm. Stacey, what are we looking at in the comments section for any questions or anything? I just realized we have a ton of comments over here. Mine was not updating. And then all of a sudden I'm like,
no worries.
I refreshed and boom, there's comments.
Yes, there are comments. Why did they not say all of this physical evidence in the autopsy till later, after and only after the LAPD and coroner office are not on the same page? Wiretaps and scouring the electronic footprint. We haven't heard about the Google searches yet. Those will be wild. And I agree with that. I think Google searches at the end of the day give away all of these criminals that we talk about.
Yeah, it's a good point. So with those questions, there were several questions there, but the bottom line is they're really not giving up anything officially. Let's be clear on that. There's very little. We've heard a few statements from law enforcement and at least one statement I've read from the ME's office, which particularly talked about how she was dressed and you know, the identification of the things like that. But we have really had very little information. The information we're getting is source information that has been distributed to various outlets and various individuals. That is really what we're working with right now.
Is that being done on purpose, or is that somebody like, okay, I'll give you a secret?
No, what that is, and you know, in the Bureau, we did this too. Listen, sources are paid a lot of money. And we had sources from within every aspect of every part of society. And when you go to that source and they have information, you pay for it. Mm-hmm. Some are on the rolls like salaried, but
sure.
Sometimes you just pay individually. And you bet you these media outlets that have been in LA for years have developed sources. And listen, cops don't make much. FBI agents don't make much. And for them to have that source of money is something that they don't mind.
Wow. So is that, why would they, as of this point, because we're hearing that inside the way that we just described of how these leaks are coming out, that he is being looked at as a suspect, but we don't have an official release saying that David is a suspect, at least on the record as of right now, other than from internal sources. Why not come up with a press conference and say this? Or is that not needed at this moment in time?
I don't think it's needed at this moment in time. And I got to tell you, you know, they really need to be balancing having somebody capable, or maybe two people capable, of dismembering and beheading a body that's out in the public right now, not arrested. Mm-hmm. So they should be putting... It's not like the Suzanne Morphew case, where that was very specifically a murder of his wife, if he again did it, because, you know, she was having an affair and, you know, very targeted.
Yeah.
This really is something. And it makes you wonder, if we believe what the PI said, that they had other plans too that were horrific, jaw-dropping, you know, would take your breath away, or however he wrote it. He wrote it very dynamically.
Yeah.
You wonder who else is on their next, who else is on their list? Are there any other minors in his circle? I mean, nobody's asking these questions, but I'm thinking about it.
Yeah. I mean, is it this or is it that? I mean, and it's scary to think about it the way you're thinking about it, but it's very much a real possibility. You know, we see so many cases where you start going, oh my God, like, is this really Odinism? You know, in cases like that, where it's like, wow, there are people that are capable of thinking these sorts of ways, that are operating in these sorts of ways. And then you start like, we're all kind of shocked by it. That's a very real possibility. I do think the other very real possibility is, this is a bunch of very stupid young people that thought that they were making the right choices at that moment in time. And it's ended up looking like this, you know, cornucopia of insanity. I don't know. I'm leaning, I think, a little more towards your direction though, Jen.
Well, I am. Initially, you and I were on the same page of that. Maybe it was an OD, you know, if this did happen New Year's, again, if we can believe the PI who says he bought the least a new Tesla February 1, and the last photos of her were seen, I believe, in February as well. We're all around the end of January, beginning of February. If all of that is true, look at how long she could have been deceased. And why do you keep a body? She wasn't discovered till September 9th.
Mm-hmm. I believe it was and all of the movements and all of the actions and all the purchases and every single piece of digital data between her death and up to today and every day that goes on until someone is actually charged need to be looked at with a fine-tooth comb, because there will be little tells likely in there from whoever did this. There's going to be actions that were taken after the fact to help conceal this, to help keep people's eyes away from this. There will be things that may not look like anything to the naked eye, but in that context are certainly going to be very telling for whoever is behind this, considering they were able to go almost a year, like three-fourths of a year, without anybody realizing there's a missing dead person in their orbit.
Yeah, and I still ask the question, if this was something that was truly just a crime of passion, something, mm-hmm. why keep that evidence around you, in your car? And that's the piece that makes it all seem so very, very dark.
It's either stupidity or ritual. It seems to be like one of the two.
One of the people in our comment section, Mr. Man 67, this sounds like the disjointed thinking of junkies.
It's a good point too. We don't know right now. I mean, if there's a lot of drug use going on here, who knows? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, we know he wrote about that in the lyrics from Romantic Homicide and the mm-hmm. lyrics from Celeste. That's all he talks about is being high. And if we could just be high forever, if I could just buy that time to be high, you know, and how great it is. And then if you look at the day after that car was dropped, July 29th, if indeed that's the day it was dropped, according to the PI, if you look at that next day, and I've posted this footage, I mean, he is high as a kite, like his eyes, barely make any sense. He's a hot wreck. So I very much believe there was drug use. And we don't know whether it was just, a little weed or weed with something else in it or
I don't know what type of weed that is. That's making you think this shit's a good idea. Yeah, that's some of
it's not the stuff that helps you sleep, let me tell you that.
It ain't what I'm doing.
Weed with LSD, I don't know. But I've got to tell you the newest information, if we believe it, mm-hmm. this is dark and ugly.
Feels like it.
It is. It gets darker and uglier by the day. We'll keep watching it. Give us your thoughts in the comments section on this case on YouTube. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi if you're listening to this on the podcast platform, so you can weigh in as well. And do hit subscribe as well. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, as always, thank you so much for being on and giving us your insight into these cases, as always. And for Todd and Stacy, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21+. Terms and conditions apply.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21+. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21+. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No.